Welcome to the See You Next Summer podcast. I'm your host, Billy Polahan, and with me, as always, is the Meryl to my Graham, Mr. Raul Rodriguez. And today we're joined by a very special guest, a good friend of mine. You know him as a co-host of Digesting Cinema, his love for Harold and Maude and Dope, and many other very niche movies. Mr. Aaron J. Brooks, welcome to the show.
Oh man, buddy. I got the full title. I'll be Rory Culkin. That's fine. Nice. I use my inhaler a lot. I won't say what sort of medicine's in my inhaler, but really happy to be here talking about M. Night Shyamalan's best movie, Signs. Everybody has their M. Night movie outside of The Sixth Sense. That's like the one that I feel like is their favorite they identify with. For me, it's Signs, and I hadn't seen it in a while, so it was a nice revisit for this podcast.
Nice. Yeah, so as always, I'm Raul Rodriguez, and I'm super excited because this is Shyamalan Month. And we already did The Sixth Sense, and that's why we skip one before someone says, I was like, why do we skip Unbreakable? Unbreakable is going to be a special month. It's going to be the trilogy, and because we want to talk about those specifically in another month. But yet, Signs, it's a movie that I adore because when I saw it in theaters, one of my biggest fears in life, and maybe that's why I can relate with Mel Gibson's too, Mel Gibson's character in the movie. Because he's talking about how you can relate faith, belief you as a human, and also believe that maybe there's something else outside of Earth, if there's other life outside of it. And so that was one of my biggest fears when I was a teenager. I was like, what if aliens are real? And the way that the movie communicates that fear, and that's still watching the movie right now, the scene of the video in Brazil still scares me. The alien leg and on the crop circles. There's a lot of scenes that still scare me. But then I remember that angle about fate, and that's gonna be a really good discussion about it.
Yeah, remember when you could actually relate to Mel Gibson? I know. I know. It's a big elephant in the room, but we have to address it at some point. Especially with the movie that we're going to cover later on in the year. I'm not going to say what it is, but it does also star Mel Gibson. And I got to point out the fact that he's still a really good actor. I mean, say what you will about him personally, but as an actor and a director, I think he is very talented. And I think his skills are sadly overshadowed by his personal reputation now. So, but this is when he still was reputable, and this is when Shyamalan was still like I remember there was a Newsweek article that said that he was going to be the next Spielberg. Like, really good call there, Newsweek. But I remember this movie like more so like the poster, and it looked kind of scary, so I was just like, nah, I'm not going to watch it. I was also like six at the time, so this was not the movie for me. But rewatching it now, like, it's not as bad as I remember. It's fucking weird, but it's got its own little charm, and we'll get into that with real quick with the plot. But before we do that, Aaron, how did you get introduced to this movie?
So I saw it in theaters, which I realized is back in 2002. So I was like, what, 2008, 2009? No, 2002. So going on close to 20 years, coming up in a few years will be the 20th anniversary of Signs. And man, you only feel older as you get older. Let me just say that first and foremost, you don't feel younger as you get older, but that's okay. I was 13 years old. I'll go ahead and date myself. I was 13 years old when this movie came out. And I think almost like kind of the perfect age for this movie in a lot of ways. For one, I didn't notice the weird dialogue and like how they talked, which is just, you know, that's like something M. Night does in a lot of movies. He does it in Unbreakable. I always do that. But Unbreakable, he does that in. But as a 13-year-old, I had never seen a movie craft the scares the way this movie did. Because, and I didn't know at the time, but like, you know, definitely the Brazil scene, which we'll get into, and particularly the knife scene when he cuts off the fingers. And it's just, it's M. Night does jump scares like a lot of horror directors or directors do, but he takes away the sound. And when he takes away the sound and the silence, you don't know when it's coming. And it's so much more scary. And there's just like, you don't know what's, and it's like the littlest thing. It was just a couple fingers being chopped off. They probably used baby carrots as like the prop in there. Who knows? But like, it was so scary. And just with the Brazil scene, I've heard a lot of people, sorry about the noise. I'm in Washington, D.C. And, you know, it's once in a while. But with the Brazil scene, it was like one scene I've heard some people talk about now. And they're like, oh, that wasn't scary. But it's like, it really is, especially in a movie theater when you are able to really absorb the silence and the noise. Silence is, I think, a really underrated aspect of movie theater. And I saw this movie twice in theaters. I think it's the first movie I ever saw in theaters twice as a kid. So I have always held Signs very, very fondly. And it was, I think, one I was afraid to revisit because I was afraid it wasn't going to live up to my 13-year-old brain, but I had a completely different experience out of it, and I loved it. And I love it as much in a different way now. So, yeah, Signs, I still love it. Loved it when I saw it. Go Signs.
Yeah, I like that point that you make about silence in a movie theater, because the only other example I can think of is A Quiet Place.
Which that this movie ripped off a lot.
Yeah. The Quiet Place did rip off a lot from Signs. And it's crazy to think about, but it definitely benefits from a theater watch. It's unless you have like an awesome like home theater, which most people don't, but you can make do, and it's still an effective movie even then. So that we're gonna start our recap.
And just one more thing on that point before we jump in, because this is important to me, because I love movie theaters and I still can't go to a movie theater in DC and I can't wait for the time. But it's like, you can't get that ultimate silence in your home theater for the most part. I live in a row house, so it's like there's no way to get that ultimate silence. You're hearing side noise and things like that. A Quiet Place out of the theater is half as enjoyable. I've watched it in both. I'm telling you, if I didn't see it in theaters first, I wouldn't have gotten A Quiet Place at all. Same with Signs in a lot of ways, but just last point on that.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, so we begin with the sort of early Microsoft title sequence with the and we get the James Newton Howard score, which I didn't realize that he did the score, or what little score there was, because there's not much music in this movie, which that was one of the first things that I took note of. But when it does happen, it's very dramatic and very I'm like, it's way too over dramatic, but that's sort of, it works with a alien feature. And it follows the Hess family, and they live in a farm in Doylestown, Bucks County, where else? Pennsylvania, because every M. Night Shyamalan movie is either in Philadelphia or it's near Philadelphia. It's like Stephen King stories in Maine. It's just a staple.
It's the Philadelphia universe.
Oh, boy. City of brotherly love. Yes, our main character is Graham Hess, played by Mel Gibson, and he's a former Episcopal priest who lost his faith because his wife passed away 6 months at that time. And she died in a traffic accident caused by, once again, a cameo by the man himself, M. Night Shyamalan, Ray Reddy. And it says to hear that he was a veterinarian. So did not know that. And additionally, Graham can't come to terms with his son, Morgan, who is Rory Culkin, whom people might know as Wallace from Scott Pilgrim, which I know some people have mixed feelings about that.
or his really good performance in Scream 4, too.
How could I forget that one? But yeah, his son's asthma condition, which causes a lot of just a lot of trouble, because asthma, it's a bad thing if it's not treated well, and most of the time you can handle it, and it's no biggie. But in like a small town where resources are sort of limited, it's kind of like, oh man. And he's lost his faith, and they both live with another one of Graham's kids, Bo, who is little Abigail Breslin.
Mm-hmm. Little and, Miss Sunshine herself.
Yeah, she was very little, and she hadn't quite gotten the acting chops that she would acquire through experience, but she does her job passably. But you also have to understand that she was very young, like maybe 3 or 4, maybe.
Also, they're not Haley Joel Osment, so. But they still did pretty good job, though.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of acted weird in the movie anyway, so I think the kids were just fitting in with the rest of the Hess family, especially. I mean, even Joaquin acts like a little kid actor in this movie. Mel Gibson, when he runs out into a cornfield, sounds like a little kid, like saying, like, I'm losing my mind, I'll kick your butt. Like, he doesn't want to swear. Like, everybody talks like a bad kid actor in this movie. I think that's just part of the motif.
And that brings me to Graham's brother, Merrill, played by the Joker himself, Joaquin Phoenix, in one of his best performances, where I don't know what he was on, or what direction he was given, but my God, is it entertaining. Because it starts with Abigail Breslin screaming, and Graham wakes up. And he goes outside to make sure that the kids are okay, because they live on a farm, and they have these awesome cornfields, which that's a great setup for a horror movie in general. It's just cornfields, because it feels very claustrophobic, and there's so much of it. You don't know where exactly you're going. It's a great setup there. And he goes to get Merrill to make sure that the kids are okay, and we see that he does care about his kids a lot. He has a thing of not swearing as well. That's a little it's a little out there, but he did say ass one time, and he's just like, I swore. Yeah, I know. And then we see the crop circles, because they find both of the kids, make sure that they're okay. They are. And then they see that they're just like, yeah, Dad, you got to see this. And it's just all these crop circles. And they're done not in the stereotypical way. It's just these enormous, like, holes in the field. And we see from a establishing shot that it's quite a bit. And it looks very alien, but it feels like something that could happen in real life. I don't know. What were your guys' thoughts on the initial opening?
I get reminded of the Scary Movie 3 opening, because when Charlie Sheen is peeing, and he hears like, stops the pee. Stops the pee. And also, when you see that beautiful shot in Signs, when you see it from an airplane kind of like point of view, you see all of the crop circle, the way that is, like, the way it is photographed. Then I get reminded of a Scary Movie 3 crop circle that says attack here. But yeah, I really like the way that there's kind of like establishing really quickly about the family, and then just running, and then they see the crop circle. And it also establishes also pretty quickly about how the dogs are behaving, that they're getting a little pretty violent too. And also another thing about, I think that I never noticed, that M. Night Shyamalan's character was a veterinarian, and Mel Gibson's character said, was like, well, we need to take him to the veterinarian. I was like, you know, we can't. Like, establishes pretty quickly that they're not going to go to him because he killed the mother of the house.
Yeah. like that. Definitely, there's all sorts of clues like that, like in the dialogue and in the background. Mm-hmm. You can learn a lot about how, you know, this is a former priest or father, whatever, you know, what there's a former pastor, whatever. But you can see like the shadow of the cross that was hung up from before that had been taken down, things like that. Definitely on a rewatch, me knowing that, you know, he was a pastor before deciding to become a corn farmer. A lot of corn quickly, a lot of corn, and never seems to do anything to manage that corn, which maybe enters a theory I'll have later on that we can discuss. But I mean, he just became like a farmer, but he doesn't have any farming equipment. He just has his brother Merrill and like two little kids. How much could they do? And all of the most perfectly tended to corn in the history of corn. So that was my first like kind of weird thing happening this time through watching it. I was looking for clues as to if this, I'll be honest, on this rewatch, I looked for clues for whether or not any of this was really happening. And I was really looking for evidence it didn't. Mm-hmm. I was essentially like a prosecuting attorney. I was just looking for any evidence to help with my argument that I was going into the viewing with. So I was like, this is a lot of corn for a pastor to grow and just have working out for him. So, and I did notice the veterinary line. Definitely that they're like, we're not going to the vet, take him to a normal doctor. We're not, you know, so.
Good. No, and I just get reminded of a theory that there was another YouTube theory that I saw a year ago that signs of the happening are happening at the same time.
Interesting.
Because remember mm-hmm. about the gas? And so, and the aliens can camouflage in whatever they can. What if they were camouflaging on the trees and the plants? And that's why people thought it was the poisonous gas that was releasing. And in the poster of the Blu-ray, a thing that I never noticed, it says science, and it says, it's happening.
Oh, my
God. Theory confirmed.
Oh, blow minds.
It's the happening.
We get our mind blown. It's happening. For sure. It's happening. It. And
confirmed.
Yeah. It's toxic. Mark Wahlberg's heavy breathing. No, we're definitely talking about the happening this month. For wait. Sure. I cannot wait. But yes, I think after this is when they go into town, or was it? Are they still establishing the characters?
They're still establishing the characters
because they established that Bo leaves around glasses of water, mm-hmm. which is weird. And then he's just like, okay, what's wrong with this one? It's got a hair in it. And what about this? It's got some dust in it.
Premonitions.
It's very mm-hmm. OCD. And you think at first it's like, okay, this is a weird thing to introduce, but it does come back later into the movie. Mm-hmm. Conveniently.
Yeah, because then we get the introduction of Caroline, the cop, about what, because they think that the crops are fake. And so that is the thing that Mel Gibson was like, maybe they're fake, maybe some brothers that I'm forgetting the name right now, but I have it in one of my pages, that maybe those brothers were the ones that are doing it and they're trying to scare people away. And then the cop says also, well, in another farm, a few miles from here, the dogs also, they got pretty violent, and maybe they think that maybe there's a predator around. And so that's also establishing that maybe there's something that is making all of the animals go a little crazy, a little insane.
Yeah, because their dog, Isabel, is acting very violent towards Bo and Morgan for some reason, and they don't know why. And the thing I noticed right away is also he does two camera tricks in this movie a lot. A lot of close-ups of the face mm-hmm. and a lot of panning shots going from left mm-hmm. to right and then right to left. He does that quite a bit. And it is used effectively in some mm-hmm. scenes in the movie. I will give him credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The sheriff or whatever, I got very strong Marge Gunderson vibes, you know, from Fargo. Mm-hmm. I just kept expecting her to just go, you betcha, father. And that's another thing. Mel Gibson is just like, don't call me father. I'm not a priest anymore.
Does that multiple times.
He says it to multiple people multiple times. And he's just like, I'm not a priest anymore. But they don't care. They just still call him that.
Yeah, because even she says, was like, I have been at Tio's place. Some animals have started acting funny, some of them violent. Is it a virus? They're more edgy, like acting like, I guess, a predator. And your father, don't call me father. And then I was like, a virus, another clue for the happening. As we see that Abigail Breslin was screaming, and then they run towards back to the house, and they see that the kid, Morgan, he defended himself from the dog. And technically killed the dog by accident because he was defending her sister.
Oh, yeah. No, they had two dogs. I forget the name of the first one, but the second one was Isabel, and they're German Shepherds.
What's Isabel?
Because, of course.
Oh, Houdini. Now I remember. Houdini,
that's right.
Houdini was the other dog.
He accidentally he kills Houdini in self-defense with a barbecue fork, which very creative way. I'm glad that they don't show it as well. It's not like Wes Anderson where you see, like, or it reminds me of Moonrise Kingdom when the kid kills the dog with the bow and arrow very violently. Ooh. And I'm just like, man, if you want shit to get real, you kill a dog. I mean, if you want the audience to immediately either hate somebody or feel like the stakes are raised, you kill an animal.
That's why we have a John Wick trilogy.
Exactly. Well, we're going to get two more movies after that.
Damn.
Yeah.
And so then the following scene, it was like we see Graham sleeping, and then he wakes up, and then we see Bo. So I was like, there's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water? What is wrong with your water next to your bed? And she's like, it tastes old. And then she says, I was like, why do you talk to mom when you're by yourself? Does she answer back? I was like, no, she doesn't. She doesn't answer me to me either. And then as we see that he's seen from afar, from her window, he sees one of the aliens on the rooftop of one of the other barns. And then we get to one of the really weird, one of the first weird dialogues in the whole movie. That we see Joaquin Phoenix like, it's time for an ass whooping. I was like, what the fuck? I didn't remember this. And I was like, we must act crazy. And he's like, and Graham was like, explain act crazy. We must curse and do stuff. So you want me to curse? Doesn't sound like me. Doesn't sound natural when I curse. Well, just do noises. And he's like, I'm insane with anger. I'm losing my mind.
Yeah, the thing I noticed right away with Joaquin Phoenix is he gets very riled up and emotional very easily. He's just always just like, come on, let's do it, Graham.
Well,
and I feel bad, but I noticed his hair lip, like, very noticeable in this movie. And like, it's a little detail.
Joaquin's a former, you know, minor league baseball standout / flame out, probably used to do a lot of steroids, still has some roid rage going on here, and now he's in the middle of his bumfuck town or whatever. Sorry, you can't swear on here.
We don't
his town of Philadelphia, and you know, his town in Pennsylvania, so it maybe is a little commentary on that, like he probably got hit in the head too many times.
Yeah, and we know that he's a former minor league baseball player because there's a random ass scene with a general because they go to the military base that's there to ask about the aliens and ask questions. Very logical response, right? But he just goes, oh, I know who you are. You're Merrill Hess. I remember when you used to hit that ball, like, what was it, 500 and 600 feet? It's like 575. And then there's the other random ass guy, the burnout there, that's just like, yeah, but you forgot another record. He also has the record for most strikeouts because he would swing every single time, no matter what anybody said. He's just like, yeah, why'd you do that? And he goes, just wouldn't feel right. Then he scares the dude and walks out. It's a random
way foreshadowing.
Some heavy foreshadowing.
It does sort of foreshadow. But in the context of the movie, it makes sense. But if you take it out of context, it's just this random out of nowhere scene, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it's
fair. All right, where were we at? They were chasing the alien, which is actually done really well too. You don't see much of it; it's just like quick, like a shadow or something, which it builds up tension really well. Which is something that this movie does is it builds up tension and it doesn't immediately diffuse it. It just keeps it going. It plays with suspense very well.
Yeah.
And I really wish that Shyamalan would do more horror like this, because he has an understanding of what constitutes like a thriller or a horror. And I know he's got it in him. It's just, yeah. And I'm hoping Old does that. Like, quick, like pan shots to like something that's unexpected. And Aaron, you brought up the fact that he doesn't use any sound, so it comes out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I really want that M Night, because man, is
for me with M Night, a lot of times the buildup or the, you know, the, it's so great. And then sometimes that third act reveal, not quite worth the squeeze. And like when it's like, show less, say less, make it more ambiguous, make it more like a, you know, less like a modern horror movie and more like a 70s horror movie where you allow the audience to formulate a little of its own opinion on how it ends and things. Because it's like one of the worst parts, not to jump ahead too much, is the CGI of the aliens when they are really out there and you really see them fully. Like when they're they should have never shown them. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or only in the partial scenes, like the Brazil scene, like very partially obscured for the most part and panning away quickly, not steady shots like at the end. Like that's like M. Night's weak. I think the first half of this movie is so much stronger than the second half, at least for me.
Hmm, interesting. And then as we saw the following scene, that they're already kind of like, it's the next day, and we see that Bo is still leaving glasses of water on top of the TV. She's watching Dexter's laboratory. And then me getting freaky of my trauma with Pretty Little Liars. One of the cups has an A on it. And I'm like, God damn it. I was like, that's an A clue. And then as we see Caroline, the sheriff, she's like, so what happened? The only thing that I have here says it was very dark. Do you know how he looked like? I was like, because I need to know what I'm looking for. I was like, is it kind of like a giant, a midget? And Graham was like, hey, it wasn't a midget. So it was tall. How certain it was a male? I was like, it can be a woman. And then Joaquin Phoenix, I was like, they cannot run that fast. And she's like, women can run fast in the Olympics. It has to be, they can jump even over 10 feet. They got a Scandinavian woman that can jump clean over me. And then Joaquin Phoenix was like, it's not a Scandinavian Olympic woman. What could be other possibly? I was like, I don't like sarcasm.
There are really funny lines in this movie. And I did not realize how much of it was comedic. And feels like it could be in the same universe as The Happening. With regards to it, just humor and comedic timing, to be honest. I'm getting more sold on this Happening verse.
Yeah, but the big difference is that The Happening's humor is unintentional, and the Signs' humor is very much intentional.
Well,
I think it is, because I feel like this was intended to be funny, and it's to diffuse some of the ever-growing tension, and you need moments to breathe and levity, and you can't have it tense the entire time, unless it's like Uncut Gems or something like that, where that movie is intentionally supposed to make you feel uncomfortable.
Well, you don't know. What if the woman that she loves lemon drinks went to that one of the services of Graham? You don't know that there's this in the Happening universe.
Yeah.
What if
you,
the word,
you know, hot dogs?
What if the that farm was like a?
Is there any Scandinavian? Is there any Scandinavian references in The Happening?
Oh, I'm gonna look for them. We have to rewatch it. Because talking about another Happening reference, they say that the dogs and the animals were behaving really bad and really weird. Remember the fucking lion killing that guy?
Like, acting pretty weird. Arm? That's a weird act for a lion, God. I'll be honest. That lion was acting weird. Ship that theory.
Yeah. I love the scene in the store where the old guy just randomly is just like, this is a big hoax to get soda products. They got 12 soda commercials on this cover. It's just like, what the hell?
I also like from that scene how Rory Culkin's is it Monroe? Is that his name? Morgan. He's Morgan. Asking if they have any books on extraterrestrials, and they're like, no. And then the woman's like, oh wait, we accidentally ordered one. It's on the third shelf down, third book to the right. Like, she's like, knows exactly where this one random ass book on aliens, and like remembers the entire story on it, and then the exact location it would be at. For like, what is going on here?
Maybe the book's previous owner was a man in a wheelchair.
Oh,
maybe.
are we just doing
this? I was looking for Martian Man. Just Martians.
Is this entire podcast just going to be theorizing about how M. Night Shyamalan movies are all connected?
Seems like a YouTube video that should already exist.
It's like the Pixar theory, but with M. Night Shyamalan movies.
Yeah, the Shyamalanverse.
I might actually really look into this now. Thank you.
No, because this is a theory. I remember the channel. It's a guy that talks really bad about movies, but then he talks about Shyamalan movies pretty well. His theory is that Signs, The Happening, and After Earth is a trilogy. That Signs and Happening are happening at the same time, and After Earth is the effects a millennia later.
Wow, now I have to watch After Earth. Thanks.
you don't have to watch After.
No, I don't.
It's not that bad.
Yeah.
The Last Airbender is worse, and because Billy made me watch it, but oh my god, I cannot believe that movie was so bad.
You're welcome. Yeah. Anyway, where were we on this? I think this is also when
when they Graham go to goes town. To
get Morgan's medicine from the pharmacy. And we get the random assistant and stuff, like the girl that works there. She's just like, "Father, I've sinned," and he's just like, "Again, I'm not a father, I'm not a priest." But she's, you know, scared because another thing that they only really touch upon in this movie is how everybody reacts. Some people think it's a hoax. Some people think it's real and are all in and going like doomsday preppers on it. And some people are just plain scared. Which in real life, yeah, this would happen. And we get this girl just pouring her heart out to Mel Gibson. And he looks so annoyed. She's just like, well, is bastard a swear? And he's just like, oh, it depends on how you use it. And then she says it. And then he's like, yeah, that'd be a swear. And then she's just like, and then I've cursed this many times. And he just looks so done.
Yeah, she's like, oh, so I didn't curse 37 times. I cursed 71 times, Father. It was like, but then also we see that also talking about exposition, we see that in the news, it said that they already caught 18 crop circles in India in the last 72 hours. As they've gone into town. And then we get also the army man scene. I was like, I know what's going on. Two people came earlier. They say that they tell that they know what they look like. They're staying in the shadows, covered like. Maybe no one, that's why no one has been hurt. Maybe it's called probing. It's a military procedure. Using a reconnaissance group and check everything and evaluate the level of danger. If it's all clear, maybe it will be clear for the rest of them. You used to play baseball. You're Merrill Hess. You did that 507-foot-tall waller. Set a record. That thing had a motor on it. You got the ballot at the wall. You have 5 records. Well, you're not in the big leagues getting your toes licked by beautiful woman. I'm like, okay.
Quentin Tarantino probably wrote that line.
And then we see that thing that you said about the other guy saying that because he was strike out. I'm not understanding anything of this because I don't know sports. I'm like, well, maybe Billy can explain that about the strikeout and the 500 foot thing. But then we see that the soda ad was for Shasta soda. And I'm like, huh, I have never seen an ad for a Shasta soda. And then I mean, I don't know if it's fake or if it was only made for the movie or if it's real.
Does it show up in the Happening cafeteria at all or anything? Is there any guest
episode? That's the thing that I'm going to look for.
I also think that like it cuts to them in a diner later, and it's at night.
At a pizza place.
Or yeah, it's at the pizza place, and it's later. And he's like, finally got the medicine and everything. Mm-hmm. And then we see that Ray Reddy, or M. Night Shyamalan himself, mm-hmm. has walked out of the door, but they locked eyes, and then he's just like, oh, shit. And lowers his head and walks away. Clearly, he's ashamed, and I really like that. This is probably M. Night's actually decent acting, because he portrays guilt pretty well. Like he plays like a regular guy, and mm-hmm. it could have been anyone, honestly, but it's just nice to see that he really wanted to do the Hitchcock thing and just cameo mm-hmm. in all of his movies in some way. I'm That's surprised the thing- that the guy's name wasn't Jay. That's my one thing, is that all his characters are named Jay. It's like the one guy that always plays Hector in all those mm-hmm. movies. I forget his name, but he always there's this Latino actor that always plays a guy named Hector, and mm-hmm. it's incredible.
And that's one of the plot holes in the Shyamalanverse, because he always has a cameo, but all of the cameos have different professions. Because, for example, in the Unbreakable trilogy, he was someone that was working at the stadium, and then he was working at the apartment building where the doctor was, and then he stopped doing that, and then he acknowledges that he had kind of like a drug problem. But also, in The Sixth Sense, he was a doctor. In Science, he was a veterinarian. So maybe you can link that up. But I was like, that's the only thing. Was like, maybe it's multiple Shyamalans. He's kind of like an X-Men kind of power, that he can like split himself in different Shyamalans, and maybe they have different personalities, kind of like a Orphan Black kind of thing.
It's funny you use the word split.
Good one.
Yeah, I believe after this is where we get the baby monitor.
Mm-hmm, the baby monitor scene.
I'm gonna let mm-hmm. you guys explain that.
You, Aaron, you're I guess.
So they start to pick up on the. You're talking about the first kind of pick up on the baby monitor. Yeah. The so one. They start to pick up mm-hmm. what sounds like some sort of interference on the baby monitor. The little girl, Bo, she's very, very sure that they're talking, and says to listen. And then kind of from there, I wasn't ready for the recap part of this, so maybe someone wants to recap and be honest with you, and I can respond off of it.
No, that's okay. It's because the technique that we do it is kind of like half recap, half mm-hmm. commentary. As we improvise with it. So, and still, you set it up pretty well, because they're in the car and they're like, they're noticing that the monitor, I think it's also a knowledge that the monitor was not working, but all of a sudden was working because of what's happening. And so they're catching the signal. And this is one of the weird lines from Joaquin Phoenix, like, maybe all of this is a lie. Maybe there's a bunch of nerds who never had a girlfriend. They're 30 years old. They work up a code together. They analyze green mythology and make other nerds to join. And nerds were doing this 15 years ago, and they're doing it now.
Why don't they have girlfriends?
And then,
yeah, his weird rant against nerds and just his
the little girl asking why they don't have girlfriends was so the funniest line to me in the entire movie.
It's so innocent. Yeah, I forgot about the context of the baby monitor. So it was when the sheriff came over and Morgan liked the walkie-talkie and said, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, we have a baby monitor, but it only works one way. So establishing, you know, it was Bo's old baby monitor, so that's why they have it in the basement. And I believe that I think Merrill or something took it to get like some batteries or whatever. And they notice that it's picking up on these weird clicks and sounds, and they're like, oh shit, that's the aliens. So now mm-hmm. they have a way that they can communicate with them.
Chico! Hang on.
I'm keeping this in the episode, perfect. By the way. Because my
how do I mute on here so I can yell at my dog and not be recorded?
There's kind of like a microphone symbol.
Yeah, I see, but it's not. I'm just gonna have to get him. Chico, buddy, you've been on a podcast. Come on, stop.
Yeah, again, I'm not editing any of this out. So
yeah, I have noticed
that happens, folks. Much like M. Night Shyamalan movies, we just go off
silent, and then now there is noise. I'm going to bring him over here, and he can hang out the rest of the time.
Oh wow! All
right, sorry about that, guys. It was a sign that he wanted to hang out with me.
It's a lot of signs that are happening.
Yeah, and so another detail that I never noticed before, as they're kind of like, we see that Morgan is up ahead holding the monitor on the air, and then Graham is behind him, and then we see Meryl, and then we see Abigail next to her. I don't know if it was on purpose, but if you remember the first craft circle, it's kind of like a small circle and then kind of like a medium one, and then like a big one, and then another small one. And I'm like, was that intentional, Knight? Was like the way that they were positioned like this in the shot, it felt pretty familiar to the first crop circle. I don't know if it was intentional, but that's pretty good if that was real.
That's an interesting, I never noticed that, but I never even like kind of thought about what the symbols possibly could be symbolizing within the movie. So that's an interesting way to look at those signs.
Yeah, so I think they climbed up on the car roof to get a better signal.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hold hands for some reason, because I guess Guardians of the Galaxy ripped that off from science.
Mm-hmm.
And then after this, I believe we get the best scene in the movie. At least for me, it's when Graham goes out into the cornfield to investigate the dog parking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done so well, because you just see him going through the cornfields, the really nice cornfields. And I agree, Aaron, because I'm from the Midwest. I see cornfields all the time. A lot of them do not look like that.
He's an amazing farmer.
Especially in the summer.
Much better farmer than he was ever. A pastor.
He learned it from the Patriot, because I believe he was a farmer in the Patriot as well. And they... he goes out there with just the flashlight and is investigating the noise. And then, you know, he's just like, who's out there? Stuff. And then we just get a quick flash of a leg, and then it freaks him out.
Mm-hmm.
And he just bolts home. He is just like scared shitless. And I believe also at this time, I think this is when Meryl is watching the news and we get the...
We get the Mexico City scene when we see all of the lights on it. It says that 15 minutes ago, Mexico City, an aircraft from Mazatlan to New York, they capture all of the unidentified like crafts and enter Mexico City's airspace. They weren't verified by any country's radars. And then as we see that Morgan says to Bo, listen, Bo, this is very important. Everything written on science book is about to change the history of the world. The future is on TV right now. You don't want your children to know that you were there, because Bo is holding to a VHS tape of her ballet recital.
Yeah, and it's her ballet recital. Mm-hmm. And that's how you know this movie is dated, because of VHS. And Morgan wants to record this, and the whole family wants to record it. And there was something, Graham didn't want the TV to be turned on. He was just like... and turn the radio off, because he didn't want to hear any of the alien coverage. He was just over it and wanted to avoid it as much as possible. But now he's just like, all right, guys, we got to turn this on, because he knows now that they're real. And
yeah,
the VHS tape that they do use is of
one of Meryl's.
And he's just like, sorry, Uncle Meryl.
And then, he says swing that on the tape. It says right there, swing. And I'm like,
I thought it said swimsuit special. And
it did say swimsuit special.
Oh, no, I thought
it was like making a
Meryl special video. We all know what that means.
Good one.
Sorry, Uncle Meryl. You're just going to have to get another video. I mean, it's mean, granted, it's if it's in a small town, it's probably very hard to find.
Striking out again.
Yeah, and then we get to, and a scene with Graham and Meryl. They're in the dark, holding Bo and Morgan, watching TV. So people are thinking it's the end of the world. Do you think that it is? Yes, it is. Can you be like you used to be, like giving me comfort? There's always two groups of people. One group of people have a stroke of luck, and then they think that there is a coincidence, evidence that someone up there is watching over them. Group number two, they see it as pure luck. For them, the situation could be solved, or maybe it could be something good or something bad. But in a very suspicious way, deep down, they know that they're on their own. They live in fear. Group one thinks it's a miracle. Think that they have someone taking care of them that fills them with hope. Are you the kind of people that see miracles or signs? Is it possible that there's no coincidences?
This is like the crux of the movie for me. This is the entire crux of the movie and like the entire existential crisis that Graham is going through throughout the movie with his family also. So his loss of faith and everything is affecting the entire family. And it's easy, and like with faith in real life, it's easy to understand it when it's with good things, to understand faith and believe in it, believe it, there's meaning. But to believe there's meaning in something terrible, like the car accident scene, which we'll talk about later when he talks to Reddy? Okay, when he talks to Reddy about that, and Reddy is like, I was supposed to be there at that time. I mean, like, it was meant to be. Mm-hmm. You're used to meant to be being for when you meet the girl of your dreams, when you, whatever, you get the good things. Meant to be isn't supposed to be when your wife gets chopped in half by a car because she was walking and he happened to be drunk at that time and it was supposed to happen that way. And it's just like the ultimate kind of existential plague of this movie for Graham and for really everybody. Anybody who has ever had faith, this is the issue. Is that when it happens like this, why are there, whatever it is, like, then where's your faith?
That's a good point. And then Meryl tells a story about how he was going to kiss a girl and he didn't, and he was nearly vomited on. And he's just like, I believe in miracles. I'm just like, yeah, that's a miracle. All right. And then, of course, Graham doesn't have an answer. And throughout the movie, we see flashbacks of the night that Graham lost his wife. We see
which scary movie ruined.
He's in a clerical, he's in a clerical suit, and we see gradually the events that do play out. I think this happens like three times.
Yeah, it's three times. Now I get reminded of Scary Movie.
It's so hard to get that. It's so hard to get that scene out of your head.
Everything's
breaking the fucking sausage, the taco, the sandwich.
But really, that's such a brutal setup when you think about it. Like, we're gonna keep this car pinned to your wife so that she can have one more conversation with you. When we unpin her, she's dead. Like, what a way to go. Because you were on a walk.
No, now I wonder, how much was she waiting for him to get there?
Well, I don't know if this would work with real life. I just don't think if the car is what's keeping you alive.
No, she's like, what is his CTA? 15 minutes? Can someone give me some tacos while I'm still dying here?
Yeah, what's that conversation like as he's like driving over to the accident site? Like so, tough break. Like, I don't know. Really split on this one. Split. Maybe it's a split sign. Sign of split being in this universe. She's split.
And then I get reminded of Charlie Sheen was like, so what about the other half? Can I still use that? I don't know what you're talking about. And he gets the donut and the wiener. And
I'm like, what are you guys breaking down Scary Movie 3? Oh, can I be back for that episode?
Yes.
If you ever do the Scary Movie movies, oh, absolutely. God,
all of them.
There's only four of them. There's no five.
Yeah.
The only the ones with Anna Faris, and only the first two and most of three.
Three is great.
I like four.
Well, four also has some good parts. But anyway, I think this is when we get the Brazil scene. And it's almost done. Oh, almost.
Yeah, almost, because then we see, was it the first setup of the accident? This was like, there was an accident. I was driving over here. No, Ray. Ray fall asleep. Colleen is talking. And what? And she's like, what ambulance is she in? She's like, she's not in an ambulance, father. And then she wakes up and she sees Joaquin. He's kind of like in a cabinet, kind of like a storage kind of unit. And then kind of like this thing that where Harry was sleeping in Philosopher's Stone. I was like, the kids were getting obsessed with the TV. I told them to go play. There has been a development. They think that they're gone, but they're not. They follow in camera a bird that it was flying, and then he hit something. And then they saw the bird, and his head was smashed in. Maybe they have kind of like an invisibility field, the way that they protect themselves during the day.
Yeah, it's just like a cabin in the woods where we see the eagle or whatever just like crash in the force field. So they didn't have the technology back then. And then, and yeah, it did remind me of Harry Potter, the cupboard under the stairs. But they have it. And Meryl is just watching the TV and his eyes are open and he's not blinking at all. And then I believe they show the footage of, they're just like, what you're about to see is real. It has not been altered in any way. And this is real. Just to establish. This was from a 30-year-old father from Brazil during a kid's birthday party. And then it's done really well, because it's just, it's, you hear the music and it's building up the tension really well. And then out of nowhere, you just see this gray alien just do the Bigfoot pose and then walk away. And then you see Joaquin Phoenix's reaction.
Oh, I love his reaction. His reaction is a perfect trailer shot.
Such a good trailer.
Oh!
No. Then he's like, come on, kids, vámonos! I was like, they don't speak Spanish, Joaquin. Joaquin, yeah, that's how you say Portuguese, your name. I was like, Portuguese. Joaquin Phoenix. That's the way that you say it in Spanish.
Come on, Joaquin, you're Puerto Rican.
And then also another thing that we also set up before this, we see that the Graham goes to the kids, and that we see Bo and Morgan using the cone things, the metal cone heads. Why are you using those? They cannot hear our thoughts with them. And I'm like, Magneto setup, comic book reference, Unbreakable reference.
After Earth. And it's like, I think there's an interesting aspect to this, though, because there's a point where, Mel Gibson's character Graham wants to go along with what the kids are believing, because it adds meaning to what's happening here. So there is a little bit of a cleverness to it as he starts to give in. And, you know, like at first he's giving a little sass and she's like, I don't appreciate your tone or whatever. Like, you know, and he's like, oh, sorry, and like snaps into it. Like, he's like a little kid. He wants to believe in something. He wants to believe that there's a way. Like,
the truth is out there.
That's just not all happening for no reason. Meaninglessness is like the thing to him that's gotten him kind of lost and away from his faith and everything. And he did that as a reaction to what happened to his wife. But it has caused him to get into his quagmire where he can't think of, you know, or get motivated and believe in anything now. So.
Yeah, because he's afraid of what will happen, really, because he's still conflicted of between faith and something so new.
Like when he talks about what his wife is saying.
This thing will never exist.
When he talks about what his wife is saying, all of a sudden he's a man of science now. It's, it was just the brain, and it was until he believed in it at the end that his belief is what saved him in the end, because he realized, oh, she's not just saying swing away because her brain was firing off. It's what he needed to do in that moment to save him. And when you spell it all out, some people, I can understand the reaction rolling their eyes, but for me, that's just brilliant.
Yeah. Yes. And I love that they touch on his psychology, and you also have to understand this aliens that directly contrasts with Faith, because it shows that they're not the only beings in the galaxy. And yeah, like how would you guys react if like aliens actually existed and landed on Earth? I wouldn't know how to react. I'd be like so shocked and overwhelmed that I wouldn't be able to process it. And it's just made worse with Graham because he's lost. Like he's lost his way as like a person because of the trauma of losing his wife.
And it's affected his whole family. It's affected his whole family. That's why.
Yeah, he is. It is causing to him to neglect his family and just live this apathetic lifestyle where it's just like, I'm sort of just going with the motions, but there's no meaning behind it.
Yeah. And then as we see that they're looking at the book that Morgan bought about aliens, they see this image of a UFO throwing a laser to a house that looks identical to them, to theirs. And even Bose was like, is that our house? I was like, it looks pretty familiar. And as we see outside of it, three burned cadavers out of it. And I love how the music focuses on those cadavers. And that's a really scary scene too. And then we follow that Graham gets a call from Ray. We see that he sees Ray in his car. He has everything packed up. He sees that he has a kind of like a stain on blood on by his stomach. And then he's always like, Father, I called you in because that was the only number that I had right next to my phone after what happened, especially of what I did to you 6 months ago. I know, but because of me, you have lost faith, and I'm sorry for what I did to your family. And Graham takes this as an apology. As also the last words that Ray said was like, I think I'm going to go to a lake. I think that maybe they're afraid of it. Because we're surrounded by crop circles and a lot of land. Maybe we could be protected in it. As also says, I left one of them in the pantry, and then he leaves his own house. And then we see the Brazil scene, and then we follow really good tension scenes, first the video, and then right after we see the knife scene.
Yeah, it carries that tension very effortlessly. And I just love the acting of Mel Gibson. Is just he does a lot of, because there's a lot of close-ups on his face, you have to be really good at conveying emotion without saying anything, and he does. And even sometimes with what he does with his voice, like sometimes his voice will crack and he's trying to be strong, but later on in the movie he just can't and he breaks down. And yes, much like I'm not gonna say it, but the knife scene is also just really good, because again, he's just I don't know why he's just like, the police are here and we got a paddy wagon outside, and he just closes his eyes and
he's mouth terrible open. At acting intimidating.
Yeah, he's terrible at that. And then he grabs the kitchen knife, and I love that he uses the reflection of the knife to see if there's anything down there. And then it's like, oh, nothing's down there. But then hand, and he just slices off three fingers. And
you hear the like yell and just everything. And you just freaked me out the first time I saw it.
Yeah, and I believe after this is when he comes home, and Meryl also has the tinfoil hat on, and I think this is when he's just like, this is like War of the Worlds, or this is exactly like War of the Worlds, and I'm like, it's not exactly like War of the Worlds.
And then a few years later, Tom Cruise did a War of the Worlds with Steven Spielberg.
Just like it was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he proposes two options. He just goes, look, we can go to the lake because I heard that they don't like water. Or we can stay here. And after he's like, we're all going to vote. I have two votes because I speak for wife as well. It's a dad move that, of course, he would pull. And he's just like, raise your hand. And at first, Meryl and Morgan want to stay, but Bo wants to go. And he's just like, all right, we're going to the lake. But then Morgan is just like, you can't have two votes. That's unfair. Mm-hmm. You're cheating. And then Bo is just like, I changed my vote. And he goes, no, you can't change your vote. But then Morgan's like, you lose. We're staying here. Also, it's because this is where mom was.
Yeah. And then as we also, they're starting boarding up the house. And because he says, like, maybe they seem to have a little trouble with pantry doors. And then as we see on the TV that already Beijing, Jerusalem, and there has been already 264 cities with the lights. And they think that in an hour could be 400. They are appearing 1 mile from a crop circle. And then there's always like, they were for navigation. They were making a map.
Yes. And then we have what I like to call the last supper scene where
good name for it.
It's very much set up like a Last Supper where, you know, I just kept expecting him to go, one of you will betray me tonight. Morgan. Judas.
Can we go through what everybody ate real quick?
Yes.
Yeah, Raul, do you have them all?
Yeah, it says, it was like, what do you want, Bo? I want spaghetti. What do you want, Morgan? French toast and mashed potatoes. That's really a weird mix. You, Meryl, chicken teriyaki. And he's like, I want a bacon cheeseburger with a lot of extra bacon.
It's just like they had all this in the house. Like, that's a lot of different ingredients and groceries. And chicken teriyaki, Meryl, what is your problem? Like, what are you two? Like, who asked for all meal? Like, that is so weird. When he's like, chicken teriyaki. I feel like Meryl was the youngest of the three children and just looked like an adult. Like, he seriously is so childish. Like, the entire time, he does not seem real. Like, he's weird. Like, chicken teriyaki. Like, dude, what? Like, the little girl literally had the most normal order with spaghetti. Like,
yeah, we needed a lemon drink and a scene where they're just like, ha, 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 ha. And then the tension just, it's just like, where chicken the hell did that teriyaki come from? Like, it's like the dinner from The Happening, once again, confirming that these two movies are in the same universe.
Like, why didn't no one say anything about him asking for mashed potatoes with French toast? Like, why did they just allow that order and like, okay. Like, what's wrong with you?
And no, this is the other thing. They only have one kitchen. They have only one stove. That's a lot of different foods to make in less than an hour.
And like, have it all warm at the same time. Yeah. Like, everybody was eating at the same time.
It's a too many cook.
It is like one of the times in this movie where I really did not feel like this was happening in real life, and this is like his like mental breakdown. Like, and he's just like, okay, yeah, then we had a dinner together, and like, it's like, no, none of this happened. This is impossible.
Yeah, and then of course the tension comes up, and even Morgan is just like, I hate you, and the Meryl's just like, don't ever say that, ever. But yeah, you don't know how awful it would be, like, as a parent. I wouldn't understand it, but I would think that if your kid tells you that you hate them, it's kind of a big deal, because hate is a strong word. And hate comes from love, if that makes any sense. You don't hate something unless it comes from, like, you care about this person. And Mel Gibson, once again, it's a regular night at Mel Gibson's house, because he's just like, all right, nobody's going to eat. I'm going to have one of everything. And then he just like gets a smorgasbord of the most random food ever, starts eating. But then everybody starts to cry, realizing that the death of the wife has really impacted them. And this is the first time they're actually acknowledging and talking about it. And then they all just break down crying. And then even Meryl doesn't, like, Meryl doesn't want to be a part of it, but Mel Gibson is just like, he just grabs him, puts him into the big group hug, and they just cry it out. And I believe this is, they use the baby monitor also to keep track of the aliens, just to make sure that they're not breaking in. And we hear, they see that the TV is no longer on, which is weird. And they board up the last doors and windows. They go to the living room to wait for the aliens because they know that they're there because they can hear them. And then we get the pan shot over from like where we hear the aliens. And the dog is barking outside. And then, yes, that's the second dog death in this movie. That got me too, because I love dogs as well.
Yeah.
And then as we see that they're boarding up the, before that, when we see the death of Isabel, we hear it. He says, like, I remember when Bo was born, all of the nurses, they were staring at your big eyes. When they were cleaning you up, I saw you and you smiled at me. Babies cannot smile that young. They thought that you were an angel. As we see that, we hear that Isabel is dying, and then we hear all of the aliens walking and like kind of like grabbing the wood of the house, making like sounds. And then Morgan gets scared, was like, do you want to know what happened when you were born? Your mom was still bleeding. They were fixing her up. She kept asking about you. And then I wanted your mama to see you first because she dreamed of you. And when she finally saw you, she held you tight and said, oh, Morgan, you're just like I dream. And then Joaquin Phoenix, I was like, they're on the roof. And they noticed that the garage door, they didn't board it up. So they noticed that they're screwed. And so they have to go all the way into the, what is the thing cellar down below? Kind of like the cellar, the attic?
No. There was the attic was the thing that wasn't boarded up. They're getting through the attic. And then, I apologize to my dog if you guys hear that. I'm going to try to talk through. And then they go down to the cellar. And then, again, I keep thinking of Scary Movie 3, where they board up the doors. They can't seem to get past this one door. And, you know, they master the art of flight and space travel, but they can't open the door.
You just got to look past it. Like,
But even a Velociraptor can open a door, so that's weird. And so then we see that they're in the cellar and they're trying to find something to block the door. And then by accident, Meryl kicks one of the light bulbs away. And then I love the way that we only hear the sound of how them running, try to block the door. And then as we see that Morgan picks up one of the flashlights and points it up at Graham and Meryl holding the door. But also they're saying it was like a, and then Morgan says, like, they're pretty smart. They were trying to find a way to distract us and try to find another way in. They're problem solvers. And then as we also, they find another flashlight. We see that they're, Graham and Meryl says, like, this cellar was used before to transport, coal. I was trying to say it in from Spanish to English. I was like, and they transported coal here. And so I love the way that they set up everything without any music. And then we see the lights and then it points out to Morgan. I was like, what? And then you see the hand behind him. The hand was also like camouflaging as coal too. We saw it black and then it was also almost invincible. And I love like how you see the flash, like in you just hear how they're trying to get him out. As also we see that he's getting an asthma attack.
Yeah, and very convenient that he's able to survive the entire night while not having any medication for an asthma attack.
Until the moment when Graham needs to rediscover his faith, you mean?
Yes, and he's talking to Morgan, and he's just like, just breathe. It's almost over.
Starts acknowledging God again.
Yes. But he even says to God, he goes, don't do this to me again.
But he's acknowledging him again. Like he had been saying God doesn't exist. God's not real, basically. Now, once again.
Yeah, he curses God, but he, you're right, this is a big step forward, and he doesn't like seeing his son suffer, because no parent wants to see their kid suffer. And they save the batteries and their flashlights by just turning them off, because, you know, batteries only have so much power.
Mm-hmm.
They hide out in the basement until morning, and once again we get a shot, much like in the beginning, of Mel Gibson waking up, and he wakes up to Meryl, who is, oh yeah, there was a radio that they found down there. Mm-hmm. So that's how they are able to keep up with current events.
Yeah, they learned that there was a raid. This technically felt kind of like a raid, and a lot of the aliens already left, but because of their poisonous gas, a lot of people died. That was like also kind of like with the happening kind of like theory on it.
Makes you kill yourself. I don't know and the rest of that quote.
Oh, it could be something more evil could have been invented.
Yeah. Anyway, I think this is when they go upstairs and they're going to get Morgan his medication or his medicine. And there's no signal coming from the walkie-talkie that Graham, and they just head upstairs, and it's starting to wind down. And, you know, he carries Morgan to the couch and is just like, hey, you all right? And he's like, yeah, you want to watch some TV? Yep, sure. And he pulls the TV out from the cupboard to the living room, which that's a great extension cable, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And we see from the reflection of the TV that there's an alien that's still there. I don't know what happened to the second alien, but we know that, or if it was just one. But it's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or it's not any alien because it's the one that he cut off his fingers.
Yes, we see that that it's the alien that was in Ray Reddy's house because of the three fingers that were cut off. And everybody is just like, oh, shit. We don't know what to do now. Hmm. And the alien has Morgan, and he's going to fill his lungs with poisonous gas.
Mm-hmm.
But
we cut out to the flashback, the important one.
The important one, where we get all the everything comes together.
Mm-hmm.
And we see him talk to his wife, and she tells him that she loves him. Look after the kids, and tell Meryl, swing away. Which I think it's referring to his love of baseball, and it's just like never stop, you know, never stop doing that.
It's a metaphor.
Yes, it's not subtle. And yeah. Graham just realizes, he just goes, Meryl, because he looks at the bat that Meryl's trophy bat that is hanging up on the wall, and he just goes, Meryl, swing away.
He saw it.
Yeah.
And then
Meryl, it was a sign.
Swung away. Do you get it?
Uh-huh.
Do you get what's happening? Yeah,
and then you hear the music.
The amount of times that the word happening has been said in this episode.
Damn, it's Scary Movie times. 3. Those two.
It's Scary Movie 3. Yeah, this is very chaotic. But it's... Can you expect anything less from an M. Night
Or from me being a guest on your podcast? Meryl. If you not listened to, if you want chaos, listen to Digesting Cinema.
I know, because every Digesting Cinema episode, or nearly everyone, it's just Aaron says something witty. Do, 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 do. Which you guys should, quick plug real quick. You guys should listen to Digesting Cinema. Aaron and Christina, they're just awesome. And they convey like what a movie or they put into words how they feel about movies much better than either of us. True.
Comparison is the thief of joy. It's a very different kind of podcast, though. If you want, like, kind of, if you like how I've been throwing this podcast off the rails and they've had to get it back on the rails after my comments, then go check out Christina doing it every week with me somehow, where she's just like, she's a teacher, so she's used to dealing with children. I'm a child, and she just, keeps me on track here.
Yeah. except we're much more positive than Christina.
Oh boy, shots fired.
No, and she's gonna kill me for that. But then we see Meryl just go full on Negan on this dude, on this alien, and just beat his ass with a baseball bat. Then one of them knocks him to, I think it was like a dresser or something, and one of Bo's waters, glass of water, falls down on him, and some of the water gets on the alien, and it sees that it's basically acid, which makes sense why the alien stopped invading Earth.
70% acid.
The planet is made up of it's made up of three quarters of the planet is made up of water, so it would make sense where they're just like, yeah, this isn't worth it, guys.
But what I kind of like about this whole last scene with Stumpy Alien is basically he got on a vengeance mission by the end of it, where like he was just like, I'm going to go back. I'm going to follow Graham to his fucking house, and I'm going to kill his kids. Like, they have like emotions of some sort.
Or just thinking in another way, because what if the aliens were not weaker to water, but because they got weaker to water as they were kind of like in War of the Worlds, remember that says they were inhaling our bacteria and our diseases and our air? What if because they got weaker, that's why water was kind of like the final nail in their coffins?
I mean, there's also humidity, so that would just be...
Yeah, water vapors in the air at all times. That's a good point. Science.
That's a big black hole in my theory. That's true.
Yeah, which is something that people like to complain about, like the whole not being able to open the doors or the whole water thing. Which
Here's my answer to that. With all those things are happening, it makes for a much less interesting movie. That's the answer, okay? It's not as interesting if you know.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care either because I enjoyed this movie a lot.
Yeah, so what happens is Meryl, he keeps beating the alien into the glasses of water, and eventually it kills him. We don't see it happen, but we know that it kills him because one of them just lands on the alien's face, and presumably it just melts his face off. And we see that Graham took Morgan outside, and he gives him his asthma medication, and Morgan recovers because his lungs were closed at the time the alien tried to put the poisonous gas in him. And Graham sees that as a miracle. He sees it as a sign of God. And he realizes that his wife's dying words meant something. And yes, they are all signs. And it saved all of his family. And it shows that it restores his faith. And he finally has purpose again. The very last scene is right before we give our thoughts is we see that he has become a priest again. He's got the whole collar get up and it's winter this time. And he is preparing for mass. And that is how the happening or not the happening. That's how signs. It's the same movie. That is how signs.
The happening prequel signs.
Damn it, I was so close. But no, that is how Signs ends. So, what did you guys think? Any closing thoughts before we give it a rating and then do the plugs? Aaron?
Closing thoughts, I had a great time rewatching this movie. There's just certain movies that it is the power of nostalgia in a way, I think, that I look past a lot of the faults even watching it today. This is just a movie that I'll remember my first feeling watching it every time I watch it. And the first time I watched it, those scares I had are some of the best scares I've ever actually like had in a movie, even though this movie I wouldn't describe as one of the best horror movies ever. The individual scares this movie does, the restraint, the sound, just like those are my favorite parts still rewatching it. And like to watch it now and see how far Joaquin's career has come and how bad of an actor he is on this. It has to be on purpose because it's like his acting is so bad. And this is right after Gladiator. Like I think great actors can act like bad actors when they want to. And I think that's what happened in this movie what is happening in this movie. Sorry, with Joaquin.
Yeah, but that, no, that's a really good point of view, because I think Gladiator was made in 2099, and this is 2 years later.
And he was amazing in Gladiator. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no doubt he had the acting chops by that point. So it wasn't like, oh, he hadn't figured out how to act yet. Like, good actors can act bad on purpose when they want to. And he clearly was trying to act like an 8-year-old through this whole movie, down to asking for chicken teriyaki. Asking for chicken teriyaki as your last meal. Like, that is like a 4-year-old would be like, chicken teriyaki. Like, it's just, I'm surprised he didn't ask for that. I don't know why. It was so random to me. Like, that a grown man would be like, we're cooking at the house. What do you want? Chicken teriyaki. Like, do we have chicken teriyaki? Like, we need fish. Like, it's like, come on, dude. We're on a farm. Order a steak or something. Like,
no.
Corn.
No, but for me, the most weirdest food thing from M. Night Shyamalan is in the movie Devil.
Oh, the jelly.
When the Mexican guy said, was like, if the toast lands on the jam side on the floor, that means that the devil is here. I remember that there was like, what the fuck is happening? And I'm like, I'm Mexican and we don't believe that.
So yeah, Raul, any closing thoughts? Because I know that
like Aaron said, it's still, like he said about nostalgia, watching the movie, those things that scared the crap out of me, it still scares the crap out of me. I remember being in the theater, reacting with every single one of the audience too. I think that also for me, seeing it on a different perspective now, because it's kind of like a family drama talking about faith and belief. And so I still like the movie a lot. The thing, it's not kind of like a horror. It's more kind of like a thriller almost. But I really love this movie a lot. I don't know if it's still my favorite M. Night Shyamalan movie, because after recent movies that happened recently from him, it made me kind of like rethink what is my favorite M. Night Shyamalan movie. But this was my favorite M. Night Shyamalan movie before I changed it. Right now I'm between Unbreakable and Glass, but I still love this movie a lot.
Yeah. Going into this month, this is the film that I was the most hesitant about. Mm-hmm. Because I knew what to expect with The Happening, and which we will cover, and our other movie, and Sixth Sense, you know, it gets the praise that it deserves. But The Signs is the one where critically it still did really well, and this still made a lot of money at the box office. But this is where the sort of cracks started for him, the cracks of his descent, unfortunately. For me, though, it's still a very well-made movie. And it's much better than most filmmakers do. This is still very early on in his career. And mm-hmm. the whole idea of, you know, faith and science, these are very heavy themes that he is touching upon, much like heavy themes that he touched upon in The Sixth Sense. But it's done in a way where it's entertaining. And again, the suspense is really good. Some of the dialogue is absolutely weird and just random, but that's one of his staples. And if you can look past that, I still say I highly recommend The Signs. And just if you want to understand who M. Night Shyamalan is as a filmmaker, then I would say you should watch this movie. And on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you guys give it as a ranking, or out of 5? Because if we're using Digesting Cinema,
Cool. You first.
If I'm going out of, I'll go out of 10. This isn't my podcast. So out of 10, I will give this an 8.5 out of 10. I think that there's about a solid probably about 1 point of nostalgia added to that. I think if you don't have the nostalgia connected to this, I would understand a 7.5 out of 10 also. But I do think it's like a B-, solid B, like Entertainment Weekly style. Like, I wouldn't say A, wouldn't say 10 out of 10 for me. There's moments that definitely get up there, but it's a little bit too uneven, at times a little bit too convenient. But still a great time, amazing shots. And the CGI of the aliens knocks it down half a point. Easy. The CGI is hard. I don't like mid-2000s or early 2000s CGI. It bums me out.
Wow. And that's a really interesting point. I will give it a 9 just because I love the scares. I love the characters. It will take out the point just because of the general scene, because I didn't remember that that scene existed in my head. It was like that scene came out of nowhere. I was like, just because I will knock it a point, but still, this is a really solid and nice Shyamalan movie.
Nice.
And I think I'm going to rank it the lowest, but I'm going to give it an 8. Mm-hmm. Just a solid 8, where, you know, I was expecting it to be like a 6 or 6.5 at most, but I was very surprised with just like the acting for the most part is pretty good. The setup is very well done. I really like the camera work and the use of close-ups, and it shows that Shyamalan, yeah, he's very talented, and I just really enjoyed this movie. I didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did, which I know, shocker. I enjoy something more than most people. Shocker. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was not expecting anything of substance in this movie. I was just like, oh, this is the one where the aliens just, they can't open the door. It's Scary Movie 3. I was expecting Scary Movie 3 the entire time, but was very pleasantly surprised. And with that, we have recapped Signs.
Chico says goodbye.
So, we love you, Chico. So, guys, you want to plug your stuff, Aaron?
Yeah, well, you plugged it for me a little bit. But Digesting Cinema with Aaron and Christina, it's just Digesting Cinema, though, is available on all podcast platforms. Christina and I met through Fan League Trivia. And after the first time of us hanging out, we said we need to have a podcast like everybody says in the 21st century to their friends as they talk. And we made it happen. And so now we follow the Featured Presentation Productions list on Letterboxd. If you just search Featured Presentation Productions, it will come up. And each week we have a subject that we cover on there. Last week we covered film noir with a good friend of ours, Payson Johnson, and we covered Blade Runner. This upcoming week, we have Adam Collins, former singles champion of the Movie Trivia Schmodown. If you're familiar with that, he's coming on to discuss a documentary called Koyaanisqatsi. It's a experimental documentary that is done with no narration and all images and music. So it should be very interesting, but it's known as one of the best experimental documentaries of all time. So tune in for that, but we've covered everything all over the place on there. We've covered Top Gun, Funny Girl. You know, there's all we got something for everybody over there. So check it out on all podcast platforms, Digesting Cinema.
Nice. And you can follow me as always at Robert RDC on Letterboxd, Twitter, Instagram, and Star and on TikTok at Robert RDC. And also you can follow the podcast at SYNS Pod on Twitter, and also give us a like, a retweet, a review. We're still trying to find who was the person that gave us a 1-star review. We're still going to try to find him. And you, Billy?
How do you know it's a him? Oh, throwback.
Maybe it's a Scandinavian woman.
Maybe it's a Scandinavian Olympian. Who knows? Yeah. It's just like, what the hell? But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at masterofpuns196. All the first letter of all of those is capitalized. You can also follow me on Instagram at Billy Batson's Lightning. Nothing is capitalized. And once again, you can listen to our podcast on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify. Just give us a rate and review. You could leave us a message on Anchor. We're probably never going to get that, but it's all good. We'll still plug it. And yeah, this has just been a ton of fun. Yeah,
thanks for having me on.
And with that, guys, it's a sign to end the show. And Raul, do the thing.
As always, see you next summer.